This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Neil Schusterman and Eric Elfman, the dynamic duo of writing fiction, young adult fiction. I don't know, we have to call you the greatest writing team around for this amazing fiction that you're writing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know, you're like the Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, the Abbott and Costello. You guys are, I don't know, did you knock your heads together and just like join, sort of meld minds or something?
Sometimes it feels like that.
Yeah,
well, it feels like that when I'm reading the book. I'm thinking, okay, you guys were having too much fun with this thing.
You got it. Yeah, I'm glad that comes across.
Oh, it does. I'm thinking, oh, God. Oh, this is just, you know, you have to write a movie about yourselves because you two are characters.
The thinking that we're working when we're just having fun.
Well, that's what I'm thinking too. That, you know, you are having too much fun here, and you are both so interesting. And I know this is a short interview today, but I'm going to have you both on separately because you both have so much to talk about. We're going to talk right now. Of course, we're going to talk about your newest book and. You know, it's a part of a trilogy, and it's just amazing. It's Hawking's Hallway, and there were two other books before that. Do you want to tell us the names of them?
Tesla's Attic. Tesla's Attic is the first.
And?
And Edison's Alley.
They are both terrific. And this is the third and final one in this series?
That's right.
That's what you're saying. Oh, you never know. You might come back for another round of this, because...
Always a possibility.
We fell so in love with the characters that we created for the story that we may at some point revisit them.
Yeah, I have a feeling there's going to be trilogy two and trilogy three. Because I don't think you can give up these characters.
Well, there's so much fun. You know, now we're getting the chance to write the screenplay as well, or the teleplay for a TV movie for it. So we're getting the chance to visit these same characters in a different medium.
Yeah, oh, you guys are little devils, really. I kept thinking, oh, these guys are such little devils. They've come out with this perfectly wonderful young adult fiction that I know they're turning into a television series because it's just it reads like a television, you know, ready to go. I can say, and of course, both of you have the experience. I can't even begin to get into each of your individual marvelous talents. I will just tell people, I want to tell people this about Neil, because you actually wrote a letter to somebody famous when you were 8 years old. Who is that?
Yes, when I was 8 years old, I wrote a letter to E.B. White. I had just read Charlotte's Web, and a big spoiler alert, the spider dies. And I was traumatized by that because my mother's name was Charlotte.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I wrote to E.B. White telling him that I felt that Charlotte needed to be reincarnated. And I guess I had just learned that concept. I was 8. And so I told him that I would co-write a sequel with him if he liked. And he wrote back to me and told me that he felt that that Charlotte's Web was complete as it was, but thanked me for my offer to write with him.
So I don't have to ask.
I still have that letter.
Well, you better have that letter. That's a marvelous collector's item. I don't have to ask if you were destined to write, because you're like destined to write. That was it. And Eric, what about you? I know you have like amazing. You are a writing coach.
Mm-hmm.
And you're part of the Big Sur writing event with Andrea Brown.
Right.
And
here they have a writing workshop up there in Big Sur, surrounded by the redwoods. It's like a little bubble. There's no internet connection. There's no phones. So it's all about writing.
Well, it's fantastic. And I'm going to have I'm encouraging my listeners to join in that. Of course, I had Andrea on a couple months ago, and we talked a lot about it. And she's such an enthusiastic agent who's always looking for wonderful talent, and I know her this Big Sur event is so much fun for the everyone who attends.
Mm-hmm. And it's fun for the staff as well. I've been there as well. Andrea's my agent also, but I tend to be in the doghouse because I have so many deadlines that Andrea says I got to finish my deadlines before I can come and be on the staff there.
Now, let's go back to the book. Hawking's Hallway, of course, you know, where did you guys come up with all these ideas?
Well, it really started back when Eric and I, you know, we both do our own writing projects, but we've been friends for a very long time and always talked about wanting to write together. The first thing we wrote together was a screenplay, and we loved doing that, and we thought, well, what if we try a book series? And so we came up with this idea of this kid who moves into a house in Colorado Springs and finds in the attic all of this weird junk, and he decides to sell it in a garage sale. But after it's all gone, he discovers that these were the last inventions of Nikola Tesla, and every single invention has the ability to destroy the world in the wrong hands.
And as it happens, the wrong hands are after them. There's a secret society of scientists called the Accelerati.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was founded by Thomas Edison over 100 years ago, and their mission was to find these inventions of Nikola Tesla. So they've been looking for them for all these years, and now that they've been sold, they're out there in the world, and it's a race against time to try and get them back. So the kids, Nick and his friends, these 14-year-old kids, are pitted against these brilliant scientists.
And we had so much fun just figuring out what these inventions were and what they did.
Well, it is. It's so the strange sort of ideas you come up with, and the humor, and all the plot twists are amazing. It's just so much fun.
Thank you.
We had so much fun. Our goal as we were writing the series was to make the other person laugh. So if I could make Neil laugh, or if he would make me laugh, it had to go in the book. We had to find a way to work it in there.
You know, we've always been fans of things like Monty Python and the Douglas Adams,
Hitchhiker's
Guide. And so we wanted to sort of infuse our stories with that kind of absurd sense of humor.
And you've done it.
Now,
tell me something. Have you sent this book to Stephen Hawking?
Well, we haven't yet. We've thought about that, and we're hoping he enjoys it.
I think he will. He's got a sense of humor. I think you should send it to him. Can you imagine a blurb from him on the back?
Yeah, well, we opened the book with a quote.
I know.
But he said, life would be tragic if it weren't so funny. Yes. That was so appropriate.
Well, it is, and that's why I'm thinking that you have to send it to him so that when you do the box trilogy, you know, you put it all in a box, a gift box for Christmas, next Christmas, you can have a blurb from him, because I think he will enjoy it. I think he will appreciate the humor and all of the fun little twists you brought out, and I don't want to give away too much, because it's just meeting Edison is an experience, and then all of your other characters that you've interwoven in there, they're great.
Thank you. One of the inventions that we see in the first book is this battery that when it's connected to something brings it back to life. And so we find out by the time we get to book two that Edison has one of these batteries, and he is still alive, you know, nearly 180 years old, connected to a battery that's keeping him alive. So it's great to actually have Edison as a character in a contemporary book.
Well, exactly. And one of the things, well, I love any book. Well, I love going back in time, and that's why the first chapter of your book, The House Drowns in Scotland, is so this is where I thought, I'm reading and I'm thinking, you two are just laughing your heads off as you're imagining this.
Yes, we are.
We absolutely were. And working on the third book in the series, Hawking's Hallway, bringing together all the story strands that we had started in books one and two, and all the character development that we had started in the first two books, and bringing them all together into a satisfying conclusion, it was so hard, because the story had gone in so many different directions, but we had so much fun trying to get all the... It was like a jigsaw puzzle, putting it together.
And so incredibly satisfying when it all did come together.
And it was so much fun when I got to the... And there's you're in Tampa. On Hillsborough Avenue. What is this? This is, I drive that road all the time, and I now every time I drive down that road, I'm going to be thinking about you guys.
Now I'm going to think about it every time.
Exactly. I was so surprised. Oh, Tampa, they're in Tampa. And of all places, on Hillsborough, which is a street that, you know, you have a connection to Tampa. Why'd you do it? Have you been on Hillsborough Avenue in Tampa?
I probably have, because I've been to Tampa many times. But we, you know, part of our research is, if we're going to go to a location in a story, we basically, if we can't go there physically, we walk down the street on Google Maps and see what's exactly what's there. So we really try to make it authentic. So even in a science fiction story like this, you know, we try to make everything that's real as authentic as it can be.
Well, you captured it. So you have to, next time you come to Tampa Bay area, you have to come to the studio. You know, that'll be fun for me to have. I'd love to. If you guys go on a book tour, that, and I can just imagine the two of you in the studio at the same time. Oh, it'd be like, you know, they're talking about lightning, you know, always here in Florida. Well, it'd be like sparks flying all over the place, like in a Tesla machine.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are just a tremendous team. I think it's just, it's so amazing. So you're turning it now into, it's going to be what, a miniseries, a television series?
Yeah, the first step, we just finished the first draft of our screenplay of the first book, Tesla's Attic, as a 2-hour movie for TV. And if that goes well, if they like it, we could either do it as a series of movies, the trilogy, or it could even become a TV series.
Well, I think I'm sure, you know, either way, it's going to be a great success. And the wonderful thing is, I know when my boys were young and they used to read Einstein, Brown, and all of those Tom Swift books and all of that, we used to sort of go around to garage sales and book sales and pick up all these old Tom Swift books and all the Einstein, Brown, all these books, and they just love this. And so it's wonderful that you're doing for this generation these books that really open their mind and to new ideas and to new terminology and you know, get kids interested in partly in history and partly in science.
Well, that was our hope. We just both enjoyed reading so much when we were younger, and I loved books that were funny and that made me think and gave me ideas of concepts and showed history in an interesting and novel way. So we just wanted to do that for the generation today and future generations.
Yeah, so kids will read the books, and while it's entertaining, at the same time, they're going to be painlessly learning a whole lot of things.
Exactly. That's the best way to do it, because, you know, people, this generation might think Tesla is only a car. You know, like, okay, he's a real person.
Yeah, exactly. But now they know that Tesla was a person before he was a car.
Exactly.
That's an inventor. He essentially invented the 20th and 21st centuries. He developed AC power, which we use today in the country. He developed the Tesla coil, which is used in televisions.
He invented radio. Most people think Marconi did, but it was Tesla.
So
Tesla's patent proves that he invented it.
So I'm here thanks to Tesla.
Yes, you are. Exactly.
Well, I love the guy. Because it's so much fun to be on the radio, and it's so much fun to be on with two characters such as yourself. You are both amazing. As I said, I'm going to send you separate invitations so I can talk to you both about your all of the work that you've done, and particularly about, you know, because I want to encourage writers to get out there and have fun together. You know, sometimes you've got an idea and you're not sure, and if you've run into somebody, well, actually bang heads against, you know, you meet somebody and you say, oh, let's bang our heads just like, you guys did, and look what you came out with. Amazing, amazing story.
Thank you.
So I'm so thrilled that I got to talk to you today, and I just want to thank you again. And make sure that when you have your movie deal, I'd like you back on also to talk about that and more when you start your third, oh, so your second trilogy. Okay?
We will be happy to talk to you again.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and you're both fantastic. I just love your work. Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, so thank you, Neil. Thank you, Eric. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, too.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with a very special guest today, Trish Arredondo, who's going to turn the tables on me, and she's going to be asking me questions. But before she gets on, I just want to say that the last segment with Neil Schusterman and Eric Elfman is dedicated to my adopted goddaughter, Kanisha, because Kanisha is writing a sci-fi book, and she's just completed it, and starting the editing process. And this is always so exciting for an author, the first time you edit. It's sometimes shocking process when you first get your book back and you have to and you realize you have to do some editing. So I'm so happy that I've been able to meet Kanisha, and I know that she's going to do a great job in getting this book done, and I look forward to reading it once she has it ready to go. But now, back in the studio here, I have Trish Arredondo. I was very thrilled to have Trish and her husband, Ray, on several months ago to promote their book, Maria's Journey. And it's a fantastic book, which I enjoyed so much. And so I'm going to say hi, Trish.
Well, hi, Patsy. And first thing I want to do is say how pleased that you were able to allow me to turn the tables. I'm going to tell a little bit to the audience about how we met. As Patsy said, she interviewed us on Maria's Journey, and it was an amazing experience for us. We've done other interviews, and she just made a connection that felt right, and she's so insightful and funny and helpful. And I think the main thing that Patsy does is she truly cares about other authors. And I would say we're very blessed to have her in our area here in Tampa Bay. And as we got to know her after the show a little more, we met her husband, Asher, and we discovered that Patsy is a fantastically amazing, energetic woman, and he is equally wonderful. I mean, they both are very deep thinkers, and yet they come across with so much humor. But the main thing is they follow through. They don't just have an idea come and say, well, maybe someday. They actually move on it. And Ray and I had thought that we'd had a pretty long run with adventure and excitement and interest until we heard them. I said, oh, my gosh. We were, you know, we've traveled a lot and done a lot of things, and we felt like pikers next to them. And we were both talking about it after we had been with them. And we both Patsy and Ray and I believe very much that everyone has their own story. And she encourages everyone, usually in her programs, get out and do your writing. You've got a story. Our sense, after listening to her, is she's got one. And we've helped people along the way with how to write their own, particularly with their memoirs of their family and so forth. And we got to thinking, well, Patty, if anybody needs to write one, it's Patty. And the idea really just sprung from the blue. I don't know what brought it on, but I said, I wonder if she'd let us interview her. I'd love to have a chance to turn the tables. Thankfully, she agreed. And here we are. So this is such a celebration of just the first year of her being on WTAN. And she has accomplished so much. So with St. Patty's Day being the actual first, right, Patty?
Yes, when I started my program,
it was quite a surprise for me to be starting a program, but I did start, and I thought it was very fortunate that it was on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, and it was a Tuesday, thanks to leap year. Now, St. Patrick's Day is coming up on Thursday, so it's nice I have a program again on my anniversary. But Tuesday is a lucky day for me, and I was so thrilled that the entire program came as quite a surprise, having read probably over 10,000 books in my life. And over the years, as Trish mentioned, my husband and I, Asher, have traveled a great deal. We've lived in many countries. And all these years, I was schlepping books from one country to another, much to Asher's consternation. He'd say, really, do you need those books? And, of course, every place we lived, I bought books, and I bought more books. And we lived quite a few years in England, which was, like, the ideal place to buy books. And I hung out at every bookstore and bookstall and amassed quite a collection of books. And when we moved, finally, when it was time for us to have children, we wanted our children to be born in America. And so we moved to Texas. And the one thing, I mean, I didn't care about anything else, the furniture, nothing else, clothes, I didn't care. I said, it's the books. And so we had just crates and crates of books that we shipped over from England. And it was funny when we had arrived, of course, first in Houston, like a month before our crates arrived. And we were renting temporarily a small condo. And when the crates arrived, the crates took up like most of the condo. And we were still sleeping on the floor because we didn't have any room to put a bed in.
That sounds very typical of true writers.
Exactly. I mean, once you have a book, and people say, well, why do you need the? Well, on more than one occasion, my husband said, you know, you really need all of them? And I said, well, yes, it's funny. I know where all the books are. Now, of course, I have them pretty well organized, but it was amazing that I had a guest on, And I just was so surprised. She mentioned her mother's name, and it was Carol Bly. And I knew that I had bought her mother's book 30 years beforehand in Minnesota, and I knew exactly where it was, in the back of the closet, the second row from the bottom. So it was so much fun that I was able to pull out a book that she didn't. I don't think she even had the book anymore, but I had her mother's book.
Well, that's the advantage of organizing, sort of. And and if you could remember where they are, if somebody starts moving them, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But I understand that. And I was amazed when you said that. And the living in England, I had grown up in England for quite a few years and gone to school there. And I just thought, of course there are books. I mean, Shakespeare lived there. You could go to all the places, and it's just amazing.
It is. It was such a joy. Of course, in those days, you know, you'd find all these little bookshops.
Yes.
And you could get all these first editions of these books. And they are treasures because you just don't find them. And although, you know, Google has copied a lot of the books in so that they're not lost, which I do appreciate that. But it's just to have that hard copy of that book.
Feel those special pages, that's right.
And, of course, they use such good paper and they use such good bindings that they've held up all these years.
Well, tell me a little bit about where you grew up before you started your adventuresome. Well, you were still having adventures.
Was born in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, and we're called Youpers. Of course, we're called super-duper Youpers.
Well, yeah.
A Youper is a very special person, of highly intelligent. Mm. Our brain power is just enormous up there, partly because, of course, we have long winters and we spend it reading. So it's a wonderful place to grow up. I was born in Baraga, Michigan, and then my father had 12 brothers and sisters, so there are cousins and relatives all over that area, in Pelkey, Michigan, and Elo, Michigan, and all these little areas that are just delightful, and with all these cousins, and so it was a wonderful place to grow up, and as I said, our summers were spent running around wild. In those days, I think of kids today and all the supervision. We were not supervised. In the morning, we would take our peanut butter jelly sandwiches, a mason jar full of Kool-Aid, and our books, and we would disappear all day and just have fun laying in the grass somewhere and reading books or running on the beach. Michigan, of course, has these wonderful wide beaches, and it just... A wonderful childhood.
It sounds like it was. And we talked a little bit about how our childhoods were considerably the same, because in Savannah, back in those days, you didn't have play dates and all of that. You did exactly what you're saying. You get your sandwich, you go, and nobody's worried that you're going to be snatched away. And it was an ideal time. And I think in England, too, I was able to read, and the time for reading and doing all of those things is we lament that it's not used as it used to be. Everybody's somewhere else doing something and being watched, usually. But you also said about your parents, and your dad, I believe, was in the Union, and story.
Well, my dad was a Teamster in the Teamsters, and a truck driver, and then also involved in Teamster things. And of course, when I was a little girl, he was fantastic. He would take me out of school so I would go to baseball games, which was, you know, when I look back on it, I think how wonderful he was, because he'd get good seats always right behind first base, and so I had a wonderful childhood of going to Tigers games and seeing some of the greatest players of all time. And then, of course, I'd go to Teamster meetings with him. I was very little, and he'd carry me sometimes on his shoulder, and I'd go with him to the meetings. And whenever Jimmy Hoffa would see me, he would yell, Patsy. And so that's where my name came from, that I have Patsy with a Z, because I insist that if it was good enough for Jimmy,
it was
good enough for
you.
And, of course, he was absolutely, for the Teamsters and for any family in the Teamsters, we love Jimmy Hoffa. What can you say? You know, he did so much, and he was quite an amazing man, and he was born on Valentine's Day. So so we always celebrated his birthday with a strawberry cake, you know, and that's in February in Michigan, and the strawberries came from Plant City, Florida.
Isn't that amazing?
That's where the truckers would bring them into Detroit for Valentine's Day. And which was a big thing, of course. And but they'd be, so I had an early connection with Plant City, Florida.
I think those things happen through our lives. Patsy's got other stories about Florida connections. But I was interested, and Ray was particularly interested, because his dad was in the steel mills, and he had immigrated up from Mexico and worked hard with the unions. And of course, he'd get fired, and his mother, who had 10 kids, would be like, oh, can't you let younger people do it? They don't have... But it was such an important thing and so needed in those days, particularly when there was nothing for workers.
Exactly. It's a different thing today, what the unions represented in those days. And of course, it was very, very hard. The truckers had a very hard life. They, before Jimmy Hoffa came along, they were taken advantage of. They would have to wait sometimes for 24 hours just sitting there waiting to get a truck to take out. It was a very hard life for them. And Jimmy changed all of that. You know, we'll go back and forth what some of the tactics. But in the end, I mean, the Teamsters at the time, the guys loved him, and we, the families loved him, because he did, you know, he was there. And they were generous. They were helpful to Teamsters families when they were in trouble and when they needed help. And of course, the Teamsters, people don't remember this, that the Teamsters were very, very big proponents of civil rights. They were right there. One of the first things that they did was to organize the egg farmers, mostly blacks, who had egg farms. And Jimmy Hoffa was right there integrating the union and making sure that blacks were accepted into the union. And so it was an exciting period of time in history, and I remember just vaguely the events of the time, but I do remember sitting on Jimmy Hoffa's lap and occasionally falling asleep in his arms during a meeting.
And so, becoming Patsy.
Patsy, that's it.
Well, when you got into your young adulthood, I know you told us some wonderful stories about that, and the scope of Patsy's life is really mind-boggling. Tell us about that. And how
I did so. Partly it was because of at one point we moved down to Detroit to be closer to, you know, where the trucking was and to the entire union world. And we were very fortunate. We lived in an area of Detroit called Highland Park. And for somebody coming from the Upper Peninsula, the greatest thing was the library. MacGregor Public Library was like paradise to me. And I still remember the day that my big sister, Natalie, took me by the hand, and we walked up the path to MacGregor Public Library. It was one of those old WPA buildings, big, magnificently done. Everything so pretty, mahogany and oak and marble, and just the most beautiful building. And there was to the right when you walked in, there was a room, a children's room, gigantic room, and the book started on one wall, started with A and went all the way around the room to Z. And my sister and I were like, we just stood there in utter amazement. There's nothing like that in the Upper Peninsula. And it was like a miracle. And we started at the A's, and we just went around the room, and we read everything.
It was your candy store.
It was. It was a delight. And I just wish, you know, that kids could experience this feeling. I'm so glad here now in Largo, they've built a very nice library, and I'm glad to see when I go in there, the kids who are
participating
and reading, because it's so important. Just read. Kids have to read. And they're finding more and more that kids want picture books. They want real books in their hands. And it's amazing to see this. Really, there's an upsurge of young adults.
I think there's
fiction.
A renaissance with people realizing with the touching the page and seeing the little pictures and everything. I know we were worried they were going out of style at one time. Everything was going to be on computer, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I think people like you are keeping it in front of people to recognize that written word is good. I love computers too,
and I love that so many younger people too are writing. They are getting into it. And I just recently had Julia Turner on, Janine Turner's daughter, mm-hmm. And Juliet is just turned 18, and at 17 she wrote a delightful book that's not hay in my hair, and wow, I was just blown away with it. And I think so many parents should encourage their
Absolutely.
Children to write.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about meeting Asher, if you want. If not, we can move right on, but I thought it was such a sweet story.
Well, you know, Asher is like, he's, of course, when I use the word joy on paper, he's the joy of my life, along with our two boys. And when I first met Asher, actually, I was working in a secretarial service in Tehran, and this is in the days before the revolution. And he came down to my office. And I will never forget it. It was his birthday. And he walked in, and people don't realize that in Tehran it gets very cold, and it was winter, it was November. And he walked in, and there was little icicles in his hair. And at that time he had big, bushy hair, and it was appropriate in the 70s,
right?
Guys had big, bushy hair. And it looked just like it was like a crown. It was amazing. And I took one look at him, and I just fell in love. And I said, I'm going to marry him. And that was it.
See, the love stories are true. I mean, people kind of wonder about that. But and it has lasted. That's the main thing. It's not
always
only...
Left.
Yes.
and the funny thing is, it's amazing. And to me, it gets better every year.
Yes.
That's the joy of it. When you find your true love, it doesn't diminish. It just gets better all the time.
Well, Ray and I have tried to discuss that with our grandchildren and saying it only gets better if you get the right person. But I think we're just looked at as old people.
So. Well, yeah, sometimes they don't believe it, but that's why I like to remind people that it's there, and if you're just blessed enough and lucky enough, and then you work at it enough, it just gets better. And I often think of this lovely couple that we know, and they're in a senior's residence now, but they are 90 years old, and to see them walking along every day holding hands and as much in love today as they were 70 years
mm-hmm.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you forget the years in between because you have all that joy there.
That's right.
That's the whole thing, to try to find the joy and share it.
That's exactly, I think you put that very beautifully. We have a similar case with our friends Carolina.
And then, of course, our boys are the joys of our lives. And we're so, so blessed that we have just wonderful, wonderful boys who've grown up into these brilliant young men. And of course, I'm not going to say that I can't take the credit, because I did homeschool them. But people say, oh, well, you homeschool them, and you know, so you should take. No, I actually can't. They outgrew me when they were about seven. Right? So the rest of it was, I don't know, homeschooling. I think they homeschooled me a lot because I learned so much from them. Particularly, by the time they were 7, 8 years old, they're doing, you know, advanced math and advanced programming. They just blew my mind away.
But you gave them the, and I was thinking about this earlier, you have that sense of following your instincts and letting people do what's right for them. Everyone has a different approach and talent in writing and anything else. And you understand that and you accept that. And I think that's what makes you special writers.
My biggest gift to them was that I took them to every bookstore, secondhand bookstore in town, and every library sale. And they never had to ask twice if they could buy a book.
Right.
So they became as fanatical as I am. And buying every book they wanted and just reading and reading and reading.
Well, I think you should take a little credit. We're going to give you a little bit of credit for that because I know that they're special boys. Now, what was it that brought that passion on for writers? I'm assuming it was your involvement with books since you started, but...
Well, that and you know, just loving books, and where my involvement came in writing was actually in writing screenplays, and I was writing screenplays. I had 3 screenplays optioned in Hollywood, which is a big deal in Hollywood. And when they put it in the Hollywood Reporter, you know, when they pay for an ad in the Hollywood Reporter, you know, $6,000 in those days, I think $6,000 for a page in the Hollywood Reporter. I think it's probably 10 or 12 now, but it was a big deal, you know, to have a film optioned. And so it was really thrilling. But as happens in Hollywood, and I just recently spoke to one of the best-selling authors of all time, and he's an award-winning author, and he has had quite a few of his books optioned, and he just was telling me that he has made one of his books has been optioned 28 times, and he has made more money from the options than he would have ever made if from the book. I mean, he hasn't made that much money from the book, but he's made so much money from the options.
Now, those are the interesting things that authors don't know.
Exactly, they don't know that. So it is fun to have a film optioned. You know, it's a money making thing, and there's actually one a millionaire author in Hollywood who has had, as last I heard, he had had about 40 of his films optioned. Wow. 40 of his scripts, original scripts, because he doesn't write books. He writes, and none of them have ever been made.
But he's a millionaire.
Well, because they get optioned, and sometimes they go into sort of limbo for a while, then somebody comes along and they send it off. And some of these scripts go around for years. I mean, we're talking scripts that go for 10, 12 years. They go around, they make the circuits. An author, you know, an actor will say, oh, I like that. And then they'll do it. And they'll say, I will option it for another year. And so you can make money from just being optioned.
Well, one of the things that we've discussed is if you're going into writing to make money, it's probably not the smartest thing you can do unless you're willing to have patience and keep plugging and you know, have some talent would be good.
it helps. It does. But, of course, sometimes it is just luck. You don't know what's going to happen. There's a shady book out there that nobody would have believed would ever have been a bestseller, let alone option for a fortune. So, you know, you don't know. And then I've spoken, quite a few of my guests have brilliant books. And they can't get Hollywood interested in them mm-hmm. for anything. Mm-hmm. And I know these books very well, and they'd make great movies, but you just don't hit the right person.
That's right.
So this is sort of how I got involved in books. I was I was hired to write a script for a book. I won't mention it. It was the book wasn't as that great, but I was hired to write the script, and I wrote a great script, and we had everything was a go. And then at the last minute, the author of the book did something that, let us say, ruined his opportunity to become a great American hero. And so the film was dropped, really literally a few weeks before ready for production. Oh. So, you know, you live and learn. But meanwhile, I've had all these books, and as my husband said, well, there must be a purpose. At some point, there's going to be a purpose. I hope there's a purpose.
There is a purpose. I'm convinced there's a purpose.
And then it happened, and I got the idea for this show, and there it was. I had all the books. I know most of them.
And you have so many connections. That's the amazing piece in such a varied
background. Well, no, I had no connections.
Well, but you did from Hollywood. I mean, through your life.
Yeah, Hollywood connections when it comes to books mean nothing.
Yeah.
Because they actually don't read the books, even if they option them. I'm sorry.
That's encouraging.
Quite honestly, Hollywood will option a book, but they rarely read it. It just doesn't happen. Somebody else reads it and says, oh, option this, okay. And then get somebody to write a screenplay, and then they'll read the screenplay. Okay. But they almost never actually read the book. I mean, this is law. It's back in the old Hollywood where the actual, you know, mayor and all these people actually read books.
Back in the good old days.
they read books. The current market is quite different.
Well, let me ask you a couple of quick questions here because they fascinate me. When you are working with people and what are your goals for the future? Because I know you've expanded the program to 2 shows and have gotten so many people involved. What do you see in the future? And tell me a little more about how you hope to help.
Well, I love, of course, talking to best-selling authors. And I've spoken to some of the best. I mean, the biggest sellers, people like Robin Cook and Sue Grafton, Carolyn Hart, Mike Resnick, Brad Meltzer, all of these wonderful people, and Doug Brunt, who are, and as I was telling somebody, the bigger they are, the more generous they are, the kinder they are, the more thoughtful they are. And it's wonderful that I am able to talk to them, talk to their agents, and then build this network of local writers and help them to develop a platform, develop a style that they can then move into getting into a larger market. And one of the things I plan to do in the future is to help people really with this whole writer's platform concept, which some people don't understand, but it is important. And it's hard. You know, writers are creative people, and it's hard for them to grasp that they have to do the business side.
And that's the toughest.
I want to help them to see the way clear, make sure they don't make expensive mistakes, because there are people out there who take advantage of writers who are unable to understand the business side. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful on that. You have to know what you're doing. And with a little pre-planning and a little organization, most writers can get out there and build a beautiful platform for themselves and make these connections they need so that they can
move forward.
And that's what I want to do.
Now, one more quick question. Tell me about your speaking engagements. I hear that you are fantastic. I've not seen you yet, but you could do a career in stand-up comic and still get the factual stuff through.
Well, it's funny. I did not know. I wasn't a public speaker before I started this. Coming on radio was a surprise for me. But what I've discovered talking to writers groups is that I actually could be a stand-up comic. Now, one of the things that I did at my last speech, and I did not realize this, I'm clinging to a book, and I'm holding this book in my arms, and I'm holding it tightly to my chest, and it took me like about 10 minutes before I realized I'm really holding on to this book, and they're like, people are sort of like, why are you holding on to that book? Because I had other books on the table to show, and I And then I looked down at it and I said, oh my gosh, this is a book. Doug Brunt sent me this book. He overnighted this book to me. And Doug Brunt, if people don't know, he's Megyn Kelly's husband. He's absolutely gorgeous. He was like my third interview. And at the time, I made the mistake of putting his picture up on my Facebook here in the studio, and I'm looking at him, and he's so gorgeous. I mean, I was like, I kept saying to him, well, I mean, it was not very professional. It was my third interview, and I was trying to be very professional. I looked at his picture. I said, oh my gosh, you're too gorgeous. I can't talk to you. I'm just looking at your picture. And so
that's what we love about Patsy.
And so there I am at this writer's conference, and I'm clinging to his book, and I'm not putting it down. I say, what are you doing? They say, why that book? And I said, well, gee, I turned it around. I said, that's why. And they saw his picture, and I said, I can't stop holding this book. And so that's what I just love to, all the sort of personal stuff I'm learning from about the authors. My interviews are not recently. Marsha Mueller, who is a Mystery Writer of America Grand Master, she wrote me an email. She said, well, it's not like any interview we've ever done because you just talk. And it's so wonderful. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm always trying to just get more out of them and to talk to them.
And you're succeeding. You are succeeding. And I think we all want to wait for your book because you're always telling us to write them. So you do your story. It is amazing. And you are a true treasure for the Tampa area. We just all thank you so much.
Well, I'm having fun. I want to promote, of course, your book. You and Ray have written a lovely book called Maria's Journey. And I know that you've just done a relaunch and it's available. Tell everybody where it's available.
Well, it's available on ebook. You can get it through Barnes & Noble. Amazon is the special one. We'd love you to write a good review if you like it. And we're actually in process of getting it done in Spanish because so many people can speak English, but not necessarily. And it's a hopeful book. It's an inspirational book about Ray's mother and raising 10 children and their successes through hard work and faith and family and just persistence in knowing the United States gives you the opportunity, but as his mom always said, you got to work for it. And that's pretty much what the whole book is about, written as a novel. Historical Society of Indiana printed.
Well, I encourage everyone to go and look for Maria's Journey. I want to thank my newest sponsor, Larson & Larson. Bill Larson is going to be on my program next week. He will answer your legal questions. If you have any, send them to me at Patsy, patzi.radio@gmail. And Bill, who I call the writer's legal eagle, will answer your questions. And meanwhile, as I always want to say, just find that joy, share it, and just enjoy life. It's so fantastic out there. And read. Expand your horizons. Thanks. See you on Thursday with my guest, special guest, David Hagberg, best-selling author. Thanks and bye.